Welcome to the Voice of Family Business on Capitol Hill. It's great to have you with us. With each podcast from Family Enterprise USA, we bring you the latest news, expert opinions, and insights affecting the country's largest employer, the American family business. If you like this series, please remember to subscribe and sign up for the alerts as future shows are posted wherever you download your podcasts. This podcast is sponsored by EY's Family Enterprise Center of Excellence, which supports families to grow more valuable enterprises, bypass disruption, and have successful generational transitions. EY is a platinum sponsor of Family Enterprise USA, demonstrating its commitment to multi-generational family-owned businesses and their legacy. In this episode, we bring you a lively and in-depth discussion with our host Pat Soldano and Sean Elward, Managing Director, Family Enterprise Business Services. Now, let's listen in on what these experts have to say on the importance of stress testing your family enterprise and wealth transition plan.
Welcome to today's podcast. I am Pat Soldano, President of Family Enterprise USA and Policy and Taxation Group. If you don't know who we are, we advocate for family offices, family businesses around the country, generationally owned family businesses and their lifetime of savings, all sizes of business and from all industries. Today, I'm very pleased to have with me today, Sean Elward, Managing Director, Family Enterprise Business Services. The topic today is reviewing or stress testing your family's enterprise and wealth transition plan. Sean, it's good to have you with us today to talk about this very important topic.
Pat, it's great to be here with you. Thank you for having us.
So I'm sure many or most of our listeners created a wealth transition plan years ago. A simple one with a few assets. And of course, if you're like many family business owners, you expanded that plan as your assets and your enterprise and your family continued to grow. Today, your assets and beneficiaries may span multiple states, and you may have a complex series of trusts and other entities. But do you have a blueprint and the proper governance in place so things don't fall through the cracks? If you have a plan, when was the last time you checked that plan to make sure it was sufficient and sustainable? This is a topic that seems like a no-brainer to me. All family business owners should have a solid, up-to-date plan in place that's ready and actionable. But oftentimes, the attention to this topic is not prioritized, and the family and the business can suffer. So, Sean, I'd like to begin with you, having you share EY's approach to family enterprise, because that's really going to set the stage for our discussion today.
Yes, thanks, Pat. So our approach to family enterprise is that we really believe there is an intersection between the family and the business that needs to be evaluated. And there are really four core areas that we focus on: the family, the assets that the family owns, the businesses that the family operates, and the values that the family has built their legacy on and how to continue that legacy into the future. And in connection with that, there are really four core strategies that we think that every family enterprise really has to have developed to be successful. And that's a generational transition strategy, a company capitalization strategy, a shareholder liquidity strategy, and a company capitalization strategy.
Sean, how do these wealth transition planning fit into those four strategies?
Well, wealth transition really triggers on two of them. It triggers on generational transition, which is all about transitioning ownership from one generation to the next. And how do you develop governance systems and education systems to support that transition? So you'll see with wealth transition plans, the trusts and entities and structures that are put into place really tie into how we approach generational transition and governance. And then shareholder liquidity, which deals with balancing the needs of the business and the needs of the shareholders and owners of the business, is implicated as well, because oftentimes those structures really require the business and cash flow from the business to support the wealth transition techniques that are being implemented. So there's a strong correlation there between the two of them.
Sean, it seems that there is a significant interest around wealth transition and estate planning these days. And I suspect some of that's because of the last tax bill and these tax provisions that are going to be expiring at the end of 2025. So can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Pat. There has been a real increase in interest in discussing wealth transition because we're operating right now under really the most favorable transfer tax regime we've been under The estate tax exemption is at the highest it's ever been. And what's happening is that at the end of 2025, that exemption in the current law sunsets and will go from having an exemption right now, which is just a very high exemption, to basically being cut in half. So we'll lose the benefit of that exemption. There's also election risk right now, right? We're heading into an election year. We've got elections in November. And there is some concern that that sunset might be accelerated prior to December 31 of 2025. So there's been a lot of interest in planning to make sure that people don't lose that excess exemption that we currently have.
And are there something more going on that our listeners should be aware of?
Yeah, we've seen, and we've talked with a lot of family-owned businesses that are very concerned about what we call the transition wave. And that's 75% of family-owned businesses are going to go through a transition wave where the CEOs, the principal owners, and the members of the C-suite are all going to be transitioning out of their current positions. So there's a potential gap there that needs to be addressed. There also are other couple of other things that are going on. We're seeing an increase in what we call the personal wealth gap. So the difference between what someone might view as their perceived wealth, so their indirect interest, for example, in the family business, they may own their interest through a trust where they view themselves as an owner, but they're not really an owner. So they're sort of rich on paper, but don't necessarily have personal wealth within their own control. So that's creating some tension between the beneficiaries and indirect owners and the businesses that we think is potentially going to be disruptive heading into the future. And then the other thing that we're seeing as well is a growing increase in non-employed family members in the family business. So they're beneficiaries or owners through trust, but they're not really receiving any kind of income or compensation directly from the business because they're not employed. So they're very dependent on distributions and cash flow out of these trusts. And we think as the beneficiaries move up and become current beneficiaries, there'll be a demand that there be additional money coming out of the businesses to fund the trusts and out of the trust to make distributions. So we think the combination of those three really require, and it's perfect timing to be thinking about your wealth transition plans to make sure that not only from a tax perspective are things in order, but from a control and governance and liquidity perspective, that you've thought this through and have developed plans that will minimize the disruption.
Well, so to that point, based on your experience, what are the most important factors that should be considered in this wealth transition plan?
So we think there's really, in addition to tax, there are five other principal areas that should be looked at and considered. And those are, first one being governance, the second being asset allocation, third being privacy concerns, fourth being liquidity issues, and fifth being compliance and reporting. And we really believe that in connection with any wealth transition plan and any focus on tax planning, that there should be a gap analysis done. There should be an analysis of where the family enterprise sits on each of these five additional issues, and understand where they currently are from a leading, developing, or no plan with regard to that area yet, and trying to improve the fact pattern. The idea being is that before the estate event occurs, we have an opportunity to improve those facts. We can look at each of these areas and help make changes to improve the position that the family and the enterprise will be in upon an estate event. And I can tell you, Pat, a little bit about each of those and what we're trying to accomplish. I'll go through them sort of one by one, starting with governance. And really what we're trying to do here with governance is really manage stakeholder expectations and define how decision-making will be made, looking at, are the correct people sitting in the right seats from a control perspective? So that's looking at trustees, it's looking at partners and partnerships, it's looking at your board of directors, and do those people, you know, have the skill sets, the experience, and the information available to them to make good decisions for both the family and the business, right? So we're focusing on the family side with regard to trusts and the entities that may be in the structure, but also on the business side, from the board of directors and the executive officers of the company, making sure that those people are properly suited and prepared to step into those roles. From an asset allocation perspective, we're really looking at where are the assets located, who has control over those assets, and where will the assets end up upon an estate event? So will they pass the specific beneficiaries? Are they in different states? And are there different attributes or characteristics of those assets that may require us to think differently about how they may be currently passing? Maybe asset A should pass to son rather than to daughter because they live in the same state. There may be some tax attributes that match up nicely. And just thinking, instead of I leave everything in equal shares to my children or into trust for in equal shares for my children, thinking about how specific assets may pass may create better circumstances for the beneficiaries and the estate overall. And then also from a control perspective for purposes of operating of the business and other entities within the structure. The other thing to think about, Pat, from an asset allocation perspective is there's been a lot of planning that's been done over the last decade or so. Right? There are a lot of trusts out there that have assets that have been transferred, sold to those trusts over time, thinking about whether there may be some opportunity to pull those assets back into the estate to get what's called a step up in basis, right? Upon death, the assets in the taxable estate have an adjustment to basis, upwards or downwards. We've gotten a little lucky over the last 10, 15, 20 years, assets generally step up, but there are It's an adjustment to it, could be up or down. So we look for assets that may be highly appreciated outside in a trust and swap those for cash or other high basis assets in the estate so that we can get the step up and minimize the income tax consequences of death. So that's what we're thinking about from an asset allocation perspective.
So you mentioned step up in basis, and I'm glad you did, because we know that Congress has advocated, and it's in the president's green book, that step up in basis could be eliminated. So I'm so glad that you're talking to our listeners about planning for their future, planning for their transition. And to that note, maybe you could talk to us about some of the five top concerns that you see when you're doing this assessment.
Yeah, so there are many things that come up, but some of the higher importance areas that we see that we like to discuss with clients to help improve is, one is just uncoordinated division of asset ownership, right? So what we often see with our estate planning techniques is a bifurcation of ownership to, for example, take advantage of discounting that may be in place. So splitting assets between voting and non-voting shares, giving minority blocks to numerous trusts or to numerous people. So what that can lead to is uncoordinated control. You may have different people in different seats that have different positions with respect to each of those interests. So thinking through the governance and how, once the plan is implemented upon the estate event, how are all of those various interests going to be coordinated and operating sort of for a common goal and common vision of the family? Related to that is just the governance that comes from that, right? Making sure that the proper people are sitting in the control seats from a trustee perspective, from an executive perspective. What we see often is someone will draft a document where they'll appoint their good close friend as the executor or trustee. And we find out that that person may be around the same age and passes away not long after the grantor passes away. And now we have a void in that seat where that person was a close friend, but doesn't have the experience or knowledge of the family or the business to really make the decisions that are necessary. So rethinking through the people that sit in those control seats are very important. So we see that that's an area that can be important to review. Liquidity planning. How are we going to, there's been a big focus on estate planning and how do we pay the tax? But in addition to tax, there's lifestyle and access to funds to support the family after the decedent passes away, right? The decedent might be the income producer, might have access to lines of credit and other sources of liquidity that we may no longer have once he or she passes away. So thinking about liquidity in advance arranging for proper access to credit facilities, notwithstanding the passing, making sure that there's enough assets in accounts that are be accessible immediately after death, thinking about how liquidity will come out of the business now that it's no longer being paid as compensation to the decedent, right? It'll now have to be distributed in the form of dividends or distributions. How does that impact all of the other owners of the business, right? So thinking through liquidity is very key. Another area that we see a bit of a gap is in just communication, a lack of communication about the business assets, the personal assets. There's no real clear plan about how things are going to be communicated upon an estate event. You know, who's going to be notified? Who's going to take charge of notifying? What is the message going to be? So really thinking through communication is key as well. And then the last and one that we've seen an uptick in interest is next generation education and preparation. So beginning to prepare the future generations to be good owners and stewards and financially responsible for the assets that they will be serving as either trustees or beneficiaries of and ultimately passing on to future generations, having them get prepared. And often find we find that they're not currently prepared, but they can be if we get started early. And then when the event happens, they're prepared for it. And then the disruption is minimized as a result of that.
You mentioned earlier that the lifetime exemption is going to expire at its current level at over $13 million per person and could drop in half at the end of 2025. We're very concerned about that so families can plan. Yes. But in order for them to plan and do this wealth transition planning that you're talking about, that means dealing with death. And that's always a difficult topic. No one wants to deal with their death. So how are you preparing people and what's being done upon an estate event?
So I agree with you. This is a topic that people do not like to talk about. It's a difficult topic. There are often difficult things to have to deal with, including confronting your own death and passing. We find that people that are focused on the legacy and focused on their long-term generational planning find that this discussion gets a little bit easier. Never easy, but a little bit easier. And what we find is that we've been helping clients really understand and put together sort of a playbook, like what is going to happen when I pass away, and I leave clear instructions and directions as to how my survivors will be able to adjust. So dealing with personal assets, dealing with business assets, helping them develop that communication plan we talked about earlier is one of the ways that we've been recently helping clients prepare.
So let's talk a little bit more about this playbook. That sounds very interesting. So what are kind of the primary areas addressed in the playbook?
So there are really five areas that we focus on in our playbook. One has to do with just the basics of the communication that's going to occur upon an estate event. So helping organize that in advance. How is it going to be communicated out to the family? How is it going to be communicated out to business partners and vendors, to creditors, to your credit facilities and lenders, so that we have a smooth and as smooth as possible transition? So that's really the first start is with communication. And that can be notifying your relatives, business partners, as I said, and then just beginning the process of administration, which is gathering information. So that's communicating with all of asset holders, banks, et cetera, to gather the information that's necessary to start the process of administration. And then the next topic we deal with is just the personal side, right? So really that the personal affairs of the decedent. So that starts with as simple as beginning with the funeral and the funeral arrangements, initiating the probate process to get probate started so that the assets can begin to flow, opening bank accounts, beginning to pay off the final debts and expenses of the estate. And that really carries all the way through estate administration, discharge of the executor, then ultimately distribution of those assets out to the beneficiaries from a personal side. We also focus on the business side, right? So that's ensuring that there's a smooth transition for the operation of the business after the estate event. And that includes filing insurance claims, securing the assets and title, making sure that we're performing appraisals and all the necessary information to be in a position to file a state tax return. And then to the extent that the client is charitably inclined, helping stand up the foundation that might be created upon death and getting that entity up and running. And then the last is really compliance, right? So setting forth and having a clear idea of what needs to be done, like from day one through week one through month one, all the way out to the filing of the estate tax return, which, you know, could be an 18 month to 2 year process, depending on the sophistication of the estate. It needs to be filed 9 months from the date of death, but you can get an extension out to month 15, and helping understand the liquidity needs to pay any tax that might be due, and then ultimately filing that tax return and assisting with distribution of assets and funding of trusts to prepare for sort of the next phase of the plan, which would be then the administration of the trusts for the benefit of the beneficiaries.
So estate planning, transition planning, and stress testing those plans is such an important topic for our listeners, and one that I really encourage them to prioritize with the exemption changes that are happening and other tax laws that are going to expire at the end of 2025. I'm so glad that you're talking about family business owners about this. And I really encourage our listeners to reach out to EY and have them help them through these transition and estate plans. But I'd like you to, Sean, please sum up if you can, give us some takeaways from our discussion today.
Well, Pat, it's been great to be here. So thanks for that. And I encourage everybody to revisit their plans. I think it's like building a house. You need a strong blueprint that encompasses the wishes of each of the family members, somebody who's responsible to carry them out, and then the location of your assets and beneficiaries should be really clear. I think focusing on governance and the control persons that will be responsible for implementing is critical and should be constantly updated and reviewed to make sure that it's consistent with the values and wishes of the owners of the businesses and the beneficiaries. I think by establishing and then re-examining and stress testing both the family enterprise to make sure that its governance is in order and the wealth transition plan, I think you'll be in a position to optimize the decision-making and increase the chances of a better outcome and reduce the potential disruption which will come from this terrible event to begin with, right? So Pat, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. I think this is a very important topic for everybody to be thinking of. And it's not just the sunset of the tax. That's what's going to get everybody to start thinking about it. But it's these other five areas that are so important to really make sure that the plan is well thought of and can minimize the disruptions.
I totally agree with you. And it has been a very timely and informative discussion. I want to thank you for your time today. I know that our family businesses and all of our listeners really appreciate all your insights that you have voiced with us here today. So thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Pat. It was a pleasure being here today.
We hope you liked today's show. And if you did, please subscribe to our podcast, where each episode discusses the critical issues affecting generationally owned family businesses and family offices around the country. You can find this podcast wherever you download your podcasts. Until next time, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this week's Family Enterprise USA podcast. This is the only series devoted exclusively to the critical issues facing America's family businesses, the families that own them, and the clients of family offices. We hope you liked this episode. Please make sure to subscribe and tell others about our podcast. Having your voice heard in Washington, D.C. and throughout the country can make a difference. This podcast is sponsored by EY's Family Enterprise Center of Excellence, which supports families to grow more valuable enterprises, bypass disruption, and have successful generational transitions. EY is a platinum sponsor of Family Enterprise USA, demonstrating its commitment to multi-generational family-owned businesses and their legacy. We look forward to having you listen in next time.